everyone. Welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We are so glad you are with us tonight. We are live right now on Facebook, on YouTube, as well as on Periscope, which is on Twitter. And we would love for you to be part of our conversation. So tonight, we are continuing our monthly theme this May. I think with COVID, every all the months are kind of blending into one another. But for May, we're talking about resources, online resources, physical resources, all the resources in the mix. And we have Dr. Brenda Murphy with us tonight. And she, when we were talking about, what do we talk about? She's like, I want to tell parents how to use their resources. And I thought that's a really good topic because sometimes we can get shelves full, can't we? Of all these resources. And then I don't have what I need. And then we start looking for new curriculum.
Oh, yes.
So thank you for being here with us tonight and helping to stretch our minds a little bit about that topic. And just that we have a lot of what we already need. We just have to look at it differently or have a good perspective on that. So, but as we're getting started, Brenda, I would just love our audience to get to know you a little bit more, know about your Academy Sail Away, kind of how that came about, just your own experiences and your own training, and kind of how that all melds together.
Oh, well, as we were saying, I had never expected when I was first starting my family that this is what I would be doing at this stage of my life. However, you never know what's going to happen. I felt like that we had, my husband and I had our lives totally under control, that we had one child and decided that we wanted a second child. And so we had a second child. And then we decided those were two boys, and we decided that we would like a little girl. So we tried very hard and we got twin boys. And then, of course, things are done when you have twin boys. And we had a surprise. And I thought, for sure, this is our little girl. But you know what? It was another little boy. And I would not trade five sons for anything. And, of course, in that mix, your best laid plans will go awry. Our oldest son, you know what I say? Our oldest son was like a Mr. Perfect. You know, when he was 2.5 or 3, we started him in one day preschool and then 2 and then 3. And he just progressed through everything exactly the way you would expect a child to progress. And just happy to go to school. And so our second son was about almost 5 years younger than our oldest son. And I was satisfied with one. And if I tell the truth, I really was one of those women who didn't really particularly want to have a lot of kids or any kid, as a matter of fact. And my husband, after several years of marriage, said, well, having children was always in his plan, so I would have to make a decision. So I said, all right, we'll have one child, you know, we'll have this one. And then he decided that he was an only child of no other family, and we thought, this is not a good thing to leave a person potentially at home alone. So we had the second one. And so when it came time for our second son to start that change from one day a week or whatever to going until he was ready to go to school full time, we started with a Mother's Morning Out program. Doesn't that sound reasonable? I mean, the most rational parenting thing you could ever decide to do. So we put him in the Mother's Morning Out, and he wasn't really the happiest camper there. I had done a Bible study, and there was a children's program. And when he was really little, he would just sit in the teacher's lap. And I thought, oh, we'll outgrow all of this. Well, in the Mother's Morning Out, he kind of was not interested in gluing cotton balls on little lamb outlines. And every activity that they wanted him to do, he was not interested in doing it. He just was not interested whatsoever. But the final straw was they were outside playing in a fenced in area, you know, a chain link fence, and they had the gate locked, and somehow he managed to compromise the lock and take three little boys out of the gate. They walked into the woods nearby, and after a while they found them. They were exploring a rotten log. And they were looking, I mean, is that not a boy thing to do?
Uh-huh, exactly.
And however, we were politely told that he was no longer welcome to the mother. So I thought, and then my oldest son's kindergarten teacher had, I was the room mother, you know, did everything the way you're supposed to. I was the room chairman, and he would come with me, and she told me, you know, if you bring your son to Pearson Town, that was the name of the school, and enroll him, after the first or second grade, the one thing I can tell you that he will have is a folder about that thick. You don't want that to happen to your child by second grade. I said, no, I don't. So that was when homeschooling was just starting to come into its fore. Mm-hmm. Actually, we had lived in the Port Arthur, Beaumont area in Texas at that time. Mm-hmm. And my husband had heard about homeschooling. And I said, never in this homeschool. You know, no way, no way, especially with that older son. And
just beware, if you're on the fence right now and you're emergency homeschooling and you're saying, never will I homeschool, here's two of us.
Yes.
I was the same way. There's a lot of people who have that story.
Yes, I mean, totally unexpected. And and here at Sailway at our school in Tennessee, and we work with people all over the country, we have had a lot of those homeschool have transitioned without expecting or preparing. And that is the most frightening experience ever. And fortunately or unfortunately, millions of families are going through that right now. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the future. And anyway, I decided I had to homeschool my second son, and I did. And he loved it. He just loved what we were doing. And I had a friend who wrote off for every catalog, homeschool catalog. That was the days of Mary Pride's Big Book of Home. You remember that one?
Yep. I kind of hit the tail end of that, but yes.
I mean, but that was all that was available.
Oh, yeah. Before internet, because that's when I started homeschooling.
it was at, I was in North Carolina by then, and if your people in your audience know North Carolina, it has one of its huge homeschool community. And I went to one, I think I was at their second state homeschool convention. It was in a church, and there were a few vendors that were in the gymnasium. And so I saw that there were some opportunities of doing things a little bit differently. So I had a lot of exposure, just like parents now. Even then, that first conference, I felt overwhelmed by everything that was there.
Right, and there really wasn't a whole lot at that point. Now you think of parents, they are really overwhelmed. There's just so many options.
Oh, yes.
It's hard to, I don't even know how they process all of that. Because, yeah, I had like a couple options, and I was like, well, which one do we use? We'll try a couple out and see what works. And we just stuck with it. But yeah, it's kind of overwhelming now, especially
very,
with diagnoses and people saying, oh, well, this works for this diagnosis. And you can just get overwhelmed quickly. Yeah.
Oh, yes, you can. And that's really at the heart of what Sail Away and my ministry has been about, is helping families to negotiate through that. And one of the reasons that I went and pursued a PhD at an R1 research institution at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, was to really gather the appropriate information, because there's a lot of research about learning, teaching and learning, that applies to how we should approach the learning task. And one of the things that stood out to me during those years of gathering deep research and the different studies that were impactful to me, because I've always been interested in literacy, reading. That I personally struggled with reading as a young person. And when my oldest son started reading, and when he came home, and the different approaches that he was using, and the ones of the homeschool families, I saw things about the way that children were learning to read that I did not think was facilitating mastery of reading, and where reading became something that was meaning based as well as how do you sound. And if you don't mind, that kind of reminded me of a little story about my oldest son, who went to public school for the first kindergarten through fourth grade. And when he came home from first grade, he's a very confident young man. And he said, "Mom, I can read any word you give me. I don't care what it is. Give me a word and I'm going to read it for you." And so I thought, okay, brain dead with four young ones around. Said, "Okay, Mom, give me a word." Mom is a good word, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I had a whiteboard eraser in my kitchen, and I walked over, because you're always in the kitchen, you know? Mm-hmm. Mothers are always in the kitchen. So
exactly.
I wrote M-O-M on the whiteboard, and I saw him just, you know, how he just, his whole being, "I can do this, I know this word." And he looked at it with this great grin on his face, and he says, "Octopus," and grinned as wide as and, okay. I went to school and I learned more about the program they were using. I'm probably not going to use that one. that started my love of literacy and approaches. It's kind of a geeky thing, but I really have enjoyed it. And
going homeschooler, for those of us, I mean, I remember learning to read, but not really knowing how I learned to read. And so when I got these curriculums to teach my kids how to read, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, and I don't know if I'm actually teaching them effectively. But, you know, really, that it was so clueless me. I have the math brain. I can teach math, you know, upside down. But reading was just one of those things that I was like, well, I guess I just follow step by step, because I have no idea what I'm doing.
And do you remember having problems with reading?
I did. I actually I started reading whole sight words and memorizing. I just said, "I'm not dumb, and I don't care if people, you know, they're not going to think I'm dumb. So I am going to get these words, you know." And so I worked really hard at, but I speed read now, and I whole word read. And actually in chunks, which is great as a speaker. I can look down at, you know, a whole paragraph and tell you exactly what's on there.
That's really, did you take a course to learn to do that, or did you just?
There was a computer program, like, way in the early days of the very first Apples that came out. My dad was a computer geek, and so he made us take computer programming when I was in, like, junior high, and that was in the 80s. Early 80s.
I worked in public relations, and one of my clients that I worked with was a program called the Evelyn Wood Reading, reading. And I traveled with one of their top readers, and we would take a trip, and she could read a whole book in a not even a long plane trip. And there were techniques, and those are some techniques that you can still learn about how you look through, and you're really reading most of it, and you're getting comprehension out of it. And that really is within the field of literacy, of reading, and from an academic perspective, there have been huge wars over what is the best approach to take. And in reality, it's a balanced approach. And there was a study that was done in the mid-70s, a huge study that had about 2,000 sites. So it was thousands.
So that's a big study.
Yeah, individual schools were involved. And each of the schools was given a particular kind of reading curriculum or approach to use to see, and they all measured it using the same measures and scales. So it was a very, very defined and well conducted and designed study, very well designed study, well done study. And after years and years, they came up with the conclusion. And the conclusion was that every program worked, but no program worked all the time.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That really is it. And that's across the board curriculum.
Yes.
I have to say.
Which really gets to the heart of what I've been doing as part of my work in the homeschool community for many years. And that is that just as it is in education at the University of Tennessee and their theory and practice in teacher education, which is the teacher preparation, is that we learn that the most important component in education is the teacher. It is not the curriculum. It is not the curriculum. The curriculum is a tool, but it is not the teacher. I like to say, teachers teach, workbooks don't.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so in order to be a really good teacher, a master teacher, it requires that we learn certain fundamentals about what we're doing. And it's not just following step by step with what a teacher's guide tells you, because even though we have written a curriculum in Salo, I never wanted to do that. I wanted to say, these are the ways that you interact with your students in a learning task, and they are going to learn.
Yes.
And one of the main ways is it's based in God's word in Proverbs. He says, no matter what you get, there's another way of saying it, no matter what it costs, get understanding.
Yes.
And that is the root that makes us successful educators.
Exactly.
And once we invest in ourselves, you know, we are willing to invest tons in curriculum, but we don't invest in ourselves. I have a poem. I would love to sit with you as a math person, someone who has a gifting in math, and learn about what you know about mathematics. And I bet that you have patterns that you have perceived over the years that help you understand math, correct?
There are. And when working with struggling learners, there's certain things I know that I need to do, because I had tutored my babysitter years ago because her mom gave up on her with math, and now I'm tutoring my neighbor boy who has memory issues. And I approach it from a very different way than, I mean, yes, I have a standard curriculum I use, but that is just like the shell. That is not the teaching. The teaching comes from my instinct and the responses back and forth. It's like this constant conversation that we have going between teacher and student.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that is critical, actually. That interaction between the teacher and the student is one of the first principles of teaching and learning. And that is critical. And if you think about it, mostly it's like lecture. And even if a child is using just the curriculum, just reading the books and answering questions, that's really not the conversation.
Right.
Not completely. You know? So this interaction, there's several ways that we interact. And interaction between the teacher and the student is critical, because you're getting that feedback.
Exactly. Because that's how you then bounce
your
student and bring them the next question. It's not just, oh, okay, we covered this one, now let's go on to the next one. Because a lot of times there's many intermediate steps in there.
And, absolutely. Yes. And if you're just doing a curriculum, they don't recognize where your student, your child, is really not getting it. And sometimes one of the things that, when I first started in homeschooling, there were times when the the books were encouraging us to move on when there was not really enough understanding. And sometimes they were giving us more than we needed, and they were bored.
Exactly. You need to know how to balance that. Exactly.
Yes. And so it's the teacher that is able to bring that alive. And in this interaction, one of the principles is called interaction, called synergy. And so it's not only just within the teacher student, but it's also oftentimes between the different subject matter. That's one of the things I love when we do the unit study or the teachable moments, because very often, especially in my field of literacy, much of that is very abstract. Very abstract. So when you interact and intersperse some of the very concrete subjects, things that a child or a middle schooler or even a high schooler can understand from a very concrete perspective, and then relate it through analogy and metaphor to something that's abstract, we're going to remember that. And and many of our children that learn differently, especially those on the autism spectrum, sometimes that very concrete is the majority of the way they're going to understand. And that's how you have to get into it, is by setting up things that they can understand in order to get involved with it. And
You take that content matter and you put it in their world.
Yes.
That was a lot with my oldest son was diagnosed on the autism spectrum, and he loves to build. I mean, you know, he's an engineer. But everything had something to build with it. When we did a unit study, his part of it was to build something, because to him, that was how he connected with the knowledge. His siblings, they could have cared less about building something. They thought what he built was really cool, but they had other things that they did.
And when you can get it that way, is really important. And and I think for all kinds of learners, patterns are very important, because the world was created with patterns. God uses patterns in everything. And one of my fields of study during my research was in design thinking. And design thinking, I took design thinking and applied it into literacy teaching a struggling learner. And what we found is that when we can recognize patterns and teach those patterns, or help, even better, help those students to discover those patterns.
It's what you want them to do.
One of the things that you said, and I should have jumped on it at the time, but we went on to something else, was you were talking about asking those children the right questions. And very often, a skilled teacher who has looked at what is this lesson about, and ask the questions so that the student is actually discovering the answer without being told.
Yeah, it's because if you just tell them, it goes one ear and out the other. I mean, it does with me too. I mean, as adults, we just don't connect with it. That's what you were talking about. You know, it's that almost that experience that you have with that knowledge to make it stick in your brain. You just have to figure that out.
And good curriculum, things that we've tried with what we are creating, is to put those in there, because we know not every homeschool parent is going to have that gifting or have the time to figure that out. However, I do believe that parents should invest, homeschooling parents or caregivers, invest in knowing what they're doing, so that when they come into questions with their students, from their students, they'll know how to answer them. And over the years, especially with many of the unexpected homeschool parents And grandparents, I'm sure you know with a lot of grandparents, we do, that one of the things that we've done, because they had no idea how to teach their kids, is we would bring the child and the parent in to our school here and do more intensive one-on-one training. I would model how to teach the child and work with them. And then over time would teach the parent or grandparent how to teach. And they would then model back, and we would have this conversation about, this is what went well. Did you see how we responded to that? And it was like, oh my gosh, they really did. And it, those are things that, that in the field of education, really good teachers have been blessed to have been mentored very closely by older teachers. Over and over again, that's what I've heard with the people that I work with that are teachers in the classroom, through my work at UT and other endeavors like that, that how did you learn to be a great teacher? And one of the ways was they observed and worked with another teacher. And that's one of the things we wanted to do and have been doing for a long time at Sail Away, is to help parents transition from just being the parent, but to have the knowledge to become the teacher. If you think about anything else, even if you go in and you're becoming, you know, you're going to work at McDonald's, you go through training.
Right.
And we do not in the as home educators.
Well, and some parents naturally have taken that on to train up their child from the very young age. And they've been, you know, they've researched and they know, you know, the things that they want to teach their child. And I think homeschooling comes more naturally when you've had that mindset in your home from when your kids are young. But if you have the mindset, well, when our kids get to be this age, it's the school's issue. And so why should we work at it? And now all of a sudden it's not the school's issue anymore. It's yours again. And so it's kind of, catches you off guard. So your organization right now is offering something for this COVID-19 time. Do you want to talk a little bit about that right now?
I would love to talk about Strong at Home. Thank you for asking me. It was not anything that I ever dreamed of doing. I belong to, because we are an organization, a business. We, part of what we do in Sailway, if you don't mind me sharing that, because
please do. I'm going to put up your website again.
Okay, thank you. Sailway is an umbrella educational services organization. We started out initially training teachers in an illiteracy approach. And we found that a lot of those teachers and parents still were struggling to teach their own children. So they came to me and asked, can you please teach? Right. So we started a tutoring service, which is still do that. Some of those parents that we were tutoring said, because at the time I had my children at home, said, you've got five kids at home. Can't you just take one more? Mine. Learning so much more with you 3 hours a week than at school. So after much prayer, we decided to do that. So then we started having small schools. We started pioneering what is now called the micro school movement. We didn't call it that initially, but that was a term that was coined for schools, intentionally small schools with special ideas, special directives or mandates. And we have been doing that, and we hope to establish these micro schools in many different places. At this point here in Tennessee, they're mostly for, we call them the kids who fall through the cracks, because there are, spans a lot of very gifted kids who are just not making it in the school situation or conflicts, just a wide range of things. So we do our micro schools. In the state of Tennessee, we are required, homeschoolers are required to register with an umbrella school. And so we have a growing homeschool umbrella program where it's very flexible. In fact, we have families from all over the country that in states where you don't get a diploma from a recognized a school, they umbrella with us, then we have a graduation, which we've had to put off. Oh, we're going to have an outdoor one. Actually, we're having two, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. And we work with them with their ready to go to college or with their curriculum plans. And one of the things that we found that when you have that kind of a school, you need to have high-level psychoeducational assessments. So we have a licensed school psychologist on our staff, and we have families from all over the country who come and use our school psychologist. Although we are kind of pioneering because of COVID-19 doing some of those assessments online. A couple of them we feel like we can, but we do the WISC, which you probably many of your families are familiar with. And that is a whole important conversation, I have to admit, because the ACT and some of the other college admissions exams are becoming stricter about the qualifications for modifications. As you well know, I must be for the choir here, but it's really important that people have assessments early if you have a child who has a problem. Many of
them document it well. That's what we tell our parents too.
Absolutely. Yeah, because actually, I think you have some excellent resources for writing IEPs, Peggy.
Yes, we do. We have a template and a step-by-step guide, and the history that you create as your student is going through school. I mean, the school does that if they're in high school, it's public school or private, some private schools. But as a homeschooler, you're left with nothing if you don't do that.
Yes. And we have had homeschoolers who knew they were homeschooling because their children had problems. And they came to being a junior and came to ACT and they wanted the modifications. They said, we're sorry.
Yeah.
We're not taking your work. Mm-hmm. And in fact, actually, there was one young man that he had had some assessments when he was really young and that had been in private school, but he was still having problems. So the assessments that we did when he was a junior in high school supported the ones that he had had in the first grade, and he got the modifications. And so, plus, assessments are not for labels. We don't give labels.
They're for helping your student.
Yes.
And for giving them the accommodations and modifications they need to succeed.
Right.
And we all have accommodations and modifications we use, whether we're labeled or not.
Yes, we do.
I use spell check. It's my downfall.
Some of the things when you do those assessments, those really high level ones, with a WISC, and we do a TOVA for attention, and we do a TOMOL, which are tests of memory and learning. You can absolutely pinpoint the areas that the child neurologically and cognitively, as you well know. There may be some of our viewers tonight who don't realize that. And so rather than going here and there trying to say, I think this is what it is, when it can be many different things. Mm-hmm. And when you do the assessments, it pinpoints the area of greatest need. And then you will be able to choose therapies or other professionals, or you may need to see an eye doctor. You may need to go to a speech language or an audiologist. And these tests help you determine what your next step should be.
Right.
And
you're not guessing, or just your student doesn't feeling like, oh, I'm just stupid. And, you know, when they get to be teenagers, they get so hard on themselves. Their deficits show greater because the workload is so much harder.
Absolutely. And the things about attention and processing speed, there are things, especially the younger that you are, that you can change. One of the biggest takeaways for me in my studies regarding the way that a child, an individual, feels about themselves is that up until a child is 10 years old, developmentally, they see themselves as capable no matter what. And that if they're struggling, well, that's okay. I can get over that. And when we intervene at 10, we can see those areas and start having interventions that are specific for it. Mm-hmm. Between the ages of 10 and 12, that view of self changes. Mm-hmm. It's built into us. And when a child is 12 and there have not been the changes to the way they learn, to the struggles that they're having, mm-hmm. the things that they cannot help, but can be changed if we know what we're doing,
right.
They tend to be very profound, and it's very difficult to change them after that. They can be changed.
Right.
There's always hope. Always
yes,
hope.
Exactly.
Always hope. Mm-hmm.
But you have to get over their self-esteem issues that come with that as well. And that's the hard part.
Yes, absolutely.
But I never knew that, the 10-year kind of...
Yes. Yeah. Very much a part
is
of
that, is that mostly physical age, like, you know, physiological, or is that like mental age? So like if a child is more cognitively young?
I would say that those are the children that, if we did a psychological profile, would fall mm-hmm. within a typical or an average IQ range, maybe even low. The children that have profound problems, that would be a longer period, for example, mm-hmm. that might not lock in until they were chronologically 12, 13, or 14.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, and that's just what we know, that when children have profound developmental delays, mm-hmm. that everything is slower.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So we're always there. We always have hope. Mm-hmm. And in doing the Sail Away, I've worked with the Knox Chamber of Commerce, and we're doing many programs to work in a business situation. And one of my fellow members is the franchisee for one of the brain training organizations that I had never gone to. We do a lot of that ourselves. That's like a whole nother conversation, Peggy, if we want to talk about that, because that's huge in our community, in the SPED community. Mm-hmm. That is huge. It's a very important, fundamental, foundational first principle that we need to talk about when we have a child who is on a spectrum, has a significant learning disability. Mm-hmm. But I had never gone to their offices. So late February, he invited me to his office to see what it was that they did. And I went in, I enjoyed it, and sat in with one young man. I guess he was about 11, working so hard. And then I saw a little girl, maybe about 8 or 9, and happened to come just as their parents were picking them up. And as soon as we learned that the COVID crisis had hit and that there would be no more schools, the first thing that came into my heart, believe it or not, were these two families. Oh. And I thought to myself, I know those parents have taken their children to that clinic. Mm-hmm. Because they're struggling with their children. Their children are struggling. Mm-hmm. And now, not only are they having problems just because the kids can't do their homework or whatever it is, they've got them there all the time. And I thought about the parents who've come to our office here who felt compelled at the drop of a hat to take their children out of school. Mm-hmm. I suppose that many of the people that you work with on a consistent basis are that way, that one day something so egregious happens to their child in that public school that they cannot allow that child to be there another day.
Right. Yeah, that is a very common scenario. Yeah.
And so they come, they'll find us, they'll come to Sail Away, and they'll say, what do we do? And so I felt that the Lord was saying, help your friend, Doug, Matt, his family. And I said, well, Doug, how can I help? Can I come in? He said, no, just write something. So I prayed about it, and the Lord had me write, how to homeschool when you've never wanted to do it.
That's a good title.
And I thought about it. It was, it was based on all these years of experience of what I tell families to do when they're coming out of a public school. Mm-hmm. The first thing that you have to consider is that that child, as well as that family, has been under in a traumatic situation for a very long time, probably.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And when you are dealing with trauma, mm-hmm. you cannot expect anyone to respond typically to the demands that are being placed on them.
Exactly, yes.
And so my first thing is what I would tell any homeschooler when they're bringing them home, stop.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Stop. Mm-hmm. Reconnect. Affirm that child. Mm-hmm. Settle Away is an acronym for Serve All in Love. Academically, mm-hmm. and dare, which means to do it quickly. But the first thing is to serve your family and your child with all the love and acceptance that you can give them. Because no matter how badly you feel, that child feels 1,000 times worse about themselves. Mm-hmm. And they need that time of restoration and affirmation and of doing things that are soothing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And affirming so to them before you do anything, mm-hmm. and enjoy, you know, the simple learning, you know, like this. Well, we've got to, you know, count our hours. Well, yeah. Well, do y'all enjoy, you know, typical? Do you enjoy reading? Do you enjoy taking hikes? Do you enjoy, you know, making mud pies? You know, whatever it is, right. You can find learning in that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And observing your child and even embracing and listening to what they're saying without words. Mm-hmm. They are going to speak worlds to you about what they are feeling and thinking without saying words to you. And I think about a student we had here at Sail Away. This was about 12 at the time, hated math. Everybody hates math, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know, I hear it.
And he was the teacher who's doing a task, and he was getting frustrated. And I think it had to do with fractions, you know.
Oh,
fractions.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. One of the things. And so what he had done is he had been so frustrated like that, and he had taken his pencil and broken it into pieces. And the teacher was kind of, yeah, he, you know, he's just so out of control and misbehaving. And it was like the child said, I kind of, you know. And so I said, you know, man, you are so smart that you are figuring this problem out by breaking the pencil in pieces.
Right. You just created a fraction.
Yeah. What? You know, that really took him aback. And so we took it. And that's kind of like knowing what to do in the present moment, how to right. take whatever it is and work with it. And he calmed down. He thought about himself as being smart in that moment. Mm. And it changed the whole atmosphere for him. And
exactly.
So those are things that we as parents must listen to and observe. And just because your child is breaking the pencil isn't telling you that he's being disobedient or disrespectful or any of these
right.
negative things. Mm-hmm. He's speaking very loudly that something isn't right.
Yeah.
Something hurts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I want to get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. We always say behavior is communication.
Absolutely.
And you can't take it personally, but you have to take a step back and really observe and pull yourself out of that equation, because it's the only way you can come with a response like you had, that the pencil was actually showing, you know, that the child is providing a solution and turning it around on them. And because it's so frustrating when the child doesn't grasp a concept. You don't know exactly what's underlying that they're not getting, and they don't verbalize that.
They don't know.
Yeah. They have no idea that that's what the problem is that things aren't connecting, and so it comes out in such, you know, weird behavior, and we're clueless.
And that's part of the principle of get understanding. Mm. And goes back to what we were talking about, the assessments, is we as educators, educating parents, if we have this tool to know that they are having an auditory processing problem, then we are going to have to intentionally limit our words, do some things to find out what form of auditory processing they're having, and then do something to work on it. So it's all very interconnected. Mm-hmm. And then with my experience with these unexpected homeschoolers, because they probably will send their children back to a public school.
More than likely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that we are going to see an increase in homeschool enrollment this coming year because of it, for various reasons in our area, a number of people, until there's a vaccine, they don't want their children back in school.
Mm-hmm. There's we have a lot of kids that are medically fragile.
Yes.
That, you know, they can't even get a vaccine, let alone, you know, be exposed to somebody who's infected. And there's just so many variables.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so rather than spending lots of money on curriculum or, you know, anything else, my advice is to go to your Department of Education website. They have standards. I'm not talking necessarily about Common Core, but there's certain standards at certain grade levels that are always there. Like, when do you need, when are they expected to know their addition facts to 10? And if your child is in that grade, well, work on that. If you know, it, you don't, it, and we are so blessed to have the internet that there are all these websites where teachers have created some curriculum to support that, or to give you some teaching ideas that, for an unexpected homeschooler, be gentle and caring to yourself. Take the path of least resistance, you know, at this point.
I love that. Yes.
You know, and then if you are really struggling, and there are some people that would really struggle with their children, get a little bit of support. And really, some of the support I'm suggesting is more with counselors in learning how to understand your home, the dynamics of home. And and so at first I thought, well, the guy who had the clinic said, you know, I think you should do some a little Facebook Live about what you've written in this article. You know, and, okay, I can do that. You know, that's fun. And then I started thinking, there's another friend in that group who has been a mental health counselor, and she's now a believer and wants to bring more of her spiritual beliefs into her practice. So she's created a coaching company that works with families so that she can get more involved with them on a kind of a level. And I thought, man, she has a lot to share, because I know that those families, there is our emotional crisis. There's huge change taking place. How do we handle change? And so we did several sessions on that, and we just keep going. And one of the parts of the change cycle that she uses is something called the hero saga. And so we thought, what a great way to interact with your children. And she has a 5-year-old. I said, experiment with Jesse. See what happens with Jesse. So she did, and he created this character called Jedi Jesse Karate. He's 5. He found costumes. He put it on, and he has made this whole world that has helped him deal with this villain coronavirus, or it's not exactly the coronavirus, but it's corona something that's like villain. And so she's integrated some of his reading words and skills into it. He's been creating all kinds of sculptures and drawings, and has invented, has got some math into it because this villain has so many other guys with him. And so through that, and encouraging families to do that, it's dispelled the fear of what's going on.
Right, exactly.
He's been able to get him to talk about what's going on with inside of himself. And if not saying it with words, expressing it through play, which children do so well.
That's the language of learning for young children.
This
playing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And they have, I don't know how you feel, but for me, when I see pre-K and even kindergartners sitting at desks with workbooks, it drives a nail in my heart.
I was a unit study mom, so we didn't do a whole lot of workbooks except, you know, on the basics that needed workbooks like math. But still, it was, you know, everyday life, you've got to apply it to. But because we relate learning so much to books and resources, but, you know, I love that example because what you're saying is resources are everywhere. And as parents, again, it goes back to the teacher and how you facilitate learning. And yes, we can use resources like books and computer and things like that, but we can't limit ourselves at that.
Absolutely. And in fact, as we've done about 30 some segments of Strong at Home now.
They can find it on your Facebook page, right?
Right there on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And last week, focused on Teacher Appreciation Week. It was the National Teacher Appreciation Week. And part of what I guess the Lord has put in my heart during this time is a heart for teachers, classroom teachers, because I think that there's all of a sudden a huge understanding on the part of many parents about what those teachers are experiencing in a classroom.
Exactly.
And I think there's going to be better communications and understanding there. And I really wanted to salute those teachers. And what I found interesting in my week-long interviews with classroom teachers, and moving forward, what we would like to see between parents and teachers, is every single one of them affirmed what I believe and what we in homeschool believe, is that the parent is the first and best teacher for every child.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. The teacher just facilitates whatever happens in the classroom, but you have to be able to continue in that relationship back and forth, whether your child just has a tutor or they're enrolled in a school full time. You know, that's like whenever my neighbor kid would come over to do math, and then we did it on Zoom for a while. But his mom and I would text right after. She's like, "How did he do? And what does he need to do at home now?" And you know, that is just as important as the instruction that you gave with the student, if that back and forth, because like you said, it continues at home.
Yes.
And it's the attitude towards it. It's not just the work that happens at home.
Yes. And I think that going forward, that parents are seeing things about their children now, and they are going to want to be more engaged at home.
Whether
they plan to bring their children home full time and they're their primary teacher. And I've been talking with some parents who are both of the parents working full time at home, they are such organized family that they have figured out how to really give their students an awesome homeschool education right now. And so I think we're going to see a lot of different models of the way that schooling is going to be. I've also heard from a lot of teachers that are saying the model that we have in the public arena right now, although they're amazing teachers and wonderful things that go on there, it's really kind of a broken system for other reasons. And that we're going to see alternative methods and options in education.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's been needing to happen for long time, and this is kind of a wake-up call, like, you know, basically, of because nobody wanted to be the first one to say this doesn't work. But when it's not, you don't have it in place, it really shows, you know, what options we have that do work better. And you know, I even have been talking with parents that say, well, we went to teletherapy, and I think we're going to stay there. We're not going back to, you know, in-person therapy. So it's all these discoveries that, you know, that families are making. And I hope they do make the best of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. It is a wonderful opportunity. And one of the things we've discussed, too, on Strong at Home is the silver linings that the situation has forced upon us. So many families are saying we're really sitting down and enjoying meals together now. We haven't in a long time. That we're just sort of taking a breath and not having fun in 100 different directions. And you know, I do think too that it's an opportunity for our homeschool families to reach out to those families that are experiencing whatever they are and joining there, kind of supporting them and in this time and moving forward. It's it's a wonderful opportunity to see and explore new things. It's awful that they had to come by this, but
It is, but like you said, a silver lining, and it really is. I know I had a friend who called me. She goes, I hear you, Peggy. You're on my one shoulder saying, what are you learning in this experience?
Yes, and you know, I don't know that I've said this, but I'm thinking that everyone should be keeping journals. You know, that is a huge homeschool skill. Love it is literacy. We do that all the time. And really just writing about what is going on in your life. And, you know, we think about some of the original texts and letters and things that we have now, people who did take the time to just jot down their thoughts and their feelings or their experiences in an important moment in life.
And this is a historic time. So keeping those records will bless generations to come.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, we are really, you know, involved in that, and certainly as home educators, that this is also has been a time, I think, to expose the positive things in home education.
Definitely.
And now everyone has experienced it, and I know that, you know, coming out of this, it's going to be helping us fine-tune what we do as well.
Oh, I think so. Yes.
That
is completely true.
Yeah. Right.
It's a two-way street. It's not that we had it all figured out. So if you're emergency homeschooling, we still haven't figured it out. And if we've been homeschooling a long time, you just get more confident in not being good at everything. Figuring it out on the fly.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, homeschooling is like everything else. If you look at it statistically, it's like a bell-shaped curve that most days are just kind of average and just kind of making your way through it. And then there are days that are so glorious.
Right.
Kind of
those are the tiny ends.
And then there's the days that you're thinking, I am so grateful that we all are in one piece.
Right, exactly. We haven't killed each other today. It's a good day.
Gone wrong, it did, and well, tomorrow is a new day, and I think
yes, exactly.
What we're going to think about, and I do think that any individual who desires or even is forced in the situation to homeschool, that the reality is that they can be their parents' the parent can be their children's best teacher. And it may be hard. It will be the hardest thing you ever do. There is nothing easy about being a home educator, whether part-time home educator, an emergency home educator, or you decided to tackle it full time. It's the hardest job you will ever love, just like parenting.
And I love that. It really is. And yeah, you look back, you know, on all the years with your kids, and there were hard times, but what you remember and the effects of that have on you and your family and your children, you can't trade them for anything.
No, you can't. And knowing that you've given your very best and your all to your children is, I think that's really the bottom line of what life is all about, that it's really that we're called to serve others, not ourselves. And indeed, serving our children is really the greatest, our family and our children is the greatest thing that we can do, because when we give them that strong foundation, then they can go into adulthood and beyond as confident, and no matter what happens, that when the difficult times come, they're going to be equipped to know how to handle them better.
Yes.
Because we have been with them, and whether we're at home full time with them or as we're seeing, I do hope and pray that this will help all parents desire to be more with their children than they have been in the past. And that there are organizations like yours and like mine that walk hand in hand with families to help them find answers to the problems that they're facing.
Understand, nobody's got it figured out, but we can point you in some directions and, you know, follow God's peace and He will lead you.
Absolutely. And be patient. One of the most important qualities. I don't know that we've actually articulated patience as a principle for teaching and learning, but it probably
it's required. Definitely. And if you haven't learned it, you'll learn it over time.
and I would encourage that when you have questions, there at Strong at Home, if you will send those to us, we will answer them. In fact, someone put a question up about a very intricate auditory issue, and we are researching the best expert we can find in that, and we're going to be doing a program about it.
Awesome.
It's called Sensory Neural Auditory Issue, and we are working with finding an expert. So please send your questions. No question is too small. You'd be surprised how little questions end up with very big, profound answers that we would love to work to answer those questions for you on Strong at Home, or if you're in our area, to work with you and consider what might an assessment do for your child moving forward.
Yeah, and you can find Dr. Brenda and Sailaway at sailawaylearning.com. And then also her Facebook is at Sailaway Learning on Facebook. But our time is up. I know we could probably talk for another 2 hours, but I have a mom's night out I got to get to for our group, because we do a Tuesday night chat room too. So they're probably all waiting for me.
That was really late.
Yeah, another hour. But this was great. Thank you so much for sharing. And I just love that parent focus. And so I hope parents just really realize you're the key. You're the resource.
Yes, you are.
And that's an incredible takeaway. Because I think parents feel like that book or whatever else has to be. And it's them.
It is them. They are the most important key to learning.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. So next week we are talking, Heather Walton will be back with us. I interviewed her, probably over a year ago, but we're going to be talking about outsourcing learning tools for diverse learners. And I know a lot of parents create a team, a lot about what Dr. Brenda was talking about, you know, bringing in other people to teach your children. And we're going to talk about just some outsourcing tools and how do you use those effectively. So that'll be next week. But thank you all for joining us here on Sped Homeschool Conversations. We'll be back again next Tuesday night for that episode. And thank you again, Dr. Brenda, for your time and all of your wisdom. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy to be here.
Yeah. All right. It was awesome having you. And I'll thank you all for watching. And we'll see you again next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Good night.